Welcome to Market Matters, our markets podcast on Making Sense, the hub for JP Morgan corporate and investment bank podcasts. In each episode of Market Matters, we discuss the latest news and trends shaping markets today.
Hi, this is Lee Price from the FICC Market Structure and Liquidity Strategy team here at JP Morgan. Today, we're going to be focused on some of the key market structure dynamics in the Asia-Pacific region and how some of the onshore markets are developing through new access routes for global investors. To do that, I'm joined by my colleague, Merity Cleary. Hey, Merity, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So, Merity, we know that emerging markets have recently been in the spotlight, and we've been tracking several policy developments influencing the access routes into some of these markets. We hear the term non-deliverable forwards or NDF markets in Asia a lot. Can you kind of set the scene for us in terms of changes underway?
Yeah, so in recent years, with the growth of electronic trading and demand for emerging markets, NDFs have really become an increasingly important tool for foreign investors to hedge and trade EM currencies. NDFs are traded offshore and don't require physical delivery of, for example, Korean won, and are instead cash settled in US dollars or another freely convertible currency. Even though NDFs still account for a small portion of overall FX derivatives volumes, we expect this segment of the market to really continue growing.
Right, and Asia now has the largest NDF markets in the world, which includes the Indian rupee, Korean won, and Taiwanese dollar NDF markets. Merity, how are some of the policies around FX market access shifted in recent years?
Well, since the Asian financial crisis in the late 90s, many countries in the region introduced FX market restrictions and controls on participation in onshore FX markets. This was intended to curb speculation and currency volatility in these less liquid EM currencies, and also to help protect a country's foreign currency reserves like the US dollar. Today, the APEC region holds the largest amount of dollar reserves than any other region. So we're seeing some of these countries gradually relax the restrictions on their currencies, which is very interesting space to be in.
Definitely. And I guess to shift gears a little bit, Korea presents quite an interesting story, being the largest and most liquid NDF market. Merity, when you think about some of the things happening in Korea, you know, what stands out to you?
Korea has drawn a lot of attention lately, as it's currently undergoing significant FX market structure reforms. These are part of a broader effort to make the won more tradable and attract foreign investors. One of the key reforms, which was announced last September, is to open Korea's onshore interbank FX market to certain foreign financial institutions. Registration opened last October, and firms are expected to begin trading by the second half of this year. However, it might take a little bit longer depending on some of the admin and registration and so on.
Okay, right. And we know that Korea has been aiming to be included in the global emerging market bond indices. What measures have they been taking to that end?
Yeah, so Korea has been working to get its bonds and other instruments listed on global indices. This is to help drive further market growth and liquidity. In February, Korea introduced several measures to help meet international benchmark requirements. This is focused on the FTSE Russell's World Government Bond Index. For example, Korea is extending its won trading hours. This is to begin this July to open new doors for liquidity in the London trading hours. Ahead of the official extension, Korea is currently undergoing a series of test pilots where market participants trade during those extended trading hours. Other measures that Korea has introduced include the removal of certain foreign investor requirements, simplified registration procedures, and over the last few years, it's been mandating that onshore companies disclose filings in English. This is, again, for the convenience of foreign investors and also to keep in line with global practices. It has been estimated that Korea could be included into the FTSE Russell's World Government Bond Index in early 2025, which could create an estimated gross capital inflow of around 70 billion US dollars. But this is just an estimation, so we definitely have our eyes on this topic.
Okay, wow. Yeah, and understood that it would be a very significant development, obviously. Let's pivot and turn our attention to another key APAC market. Last year, it was announced that India is being added to the JP Morgan Emerging Market Bond Index, which is set to go live soon. Let's explore that for a minute.
Yes, India is really in the spotlight right now. So this is set to occur over a 10-month period beginning June 28th of this year through March 2025. And the reason this has really made headlines is because in those 10 months, the inclusion is expected to bring in around $24 billion US dollars in inflows to India's bond market.
Okay, understood. So another, you know, very significant potential development there. And the internationalization of the rupee is also a key topic. Marty, what are some of the key reforms we're seeing to help build liquidity and depth in India's FX markets?
Yeah, so for context, in the past decade or so, the Reserve Bank of India, or RBI, has been working to reduce volatility in the rupee. Now that India feels better capitalized with foreign currency reserves, policymakers are introducing measures to gradually open up the rupee markets. A key development happened last April when India announced plans to allow certain financial institutions within the GIFT City, so this is India's offshore financial market, to trade NDFs with residents onshore. The hope is that by developing an onshore NDF market, volatility in the rupee will be better managed. RBI also released a report on the internationalization of the rupee last June, so it's clearly a big focus, as you mentioned. Other measures to enhance the market access for foreign investors include the extension of onshore trading hours, similar to Korea. And India has also introduced other measures like easing certain underlying asset requirements to facilitate FX transactions and allowing the free cancellation or rollover of contracts.
A lot going on there, and it sounds like the GIFT City is becoming an increasingly valuable financial center for India.
Yeah, it really is. This GIFT City is India's only IFSC, which is an International Financial Services Center. Recently, there have been talks that RBI and the city are collaborating on the domestic trading and clearing systems. So there's clearly a big focus on the development of market infrastructures.
Okay, and we briefly touched on currency internationalization. China has been looking to grow the international presence of the renminbi and its onshore markets more broadly. We know that traditionally, China has kept its onshore market fairly controlled. When you think about the measures to allow more foreign participation in the mainland, what comes to mind, Marty?
Yeah, so the connect schemes between mainland China and Hong Kong have been very key. They've created new access routes for international investors. For example, Bond Connect went live in 2017 and Swap Connect in 2023. These have really helped to expand the hedging options for foreign investors, which has been impactful. In late January of this year, regulators in Hong Kong and China announced six policy measures to further develop financial cooperation. One of the key measures is that of Repo Connect. Essentially, this would open China's onshore bond repo market to offshore institutional investors that already have access to China's interbank bond market. So the opening of China's $232 trillion repo market could be impactful and will provide offshore investors with more tools to finance their yuan bond holdings.
Right. So obviously it could be hugely significant. Currently, we're waiting on more details to emerge on Repo Connect, but the expectation is that the netting will be covered once China's bankruptcy law is passed, potentially next year, but all these moving pieces are still in the works. So let's shift gears again. We also have our eyes on the announcement that the Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing Limited plans to launch China Treasury Bond Futures. This is primarily to improve liquidity and further strengthen Hong Kong as a renminbi hub. We're waiting for more details ahead of this launch, including set timeframes and regulatory approvals. Marty, before we wrap up, what else is on our radar in terms of APAC market structure?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. We've seen a growing focus globally, for example, on digital finance and boosting the opportunities for tokenization in markets. This has also been a focus in Asia. Hong Kong, for example, released several consultations on tokenization and a new proposed regime for stablecoin issuers. That all happened in just a matter of weeks. So clearly a big topic. I would also say ESG and sustainability is a big focus point. Regulators in Asia have been focused on the development of rating systems, taxonomies, and climate-related disclosures. For example, the second version of the ASEAN member states taxonomy was published in February. Singapore just released their sustainability framework, and India just released their climate-related disclosure framework. So clearly a lot of focus in that area.
Yes, and of course, artificial intelligence seems to be the hot topic of 2024.
Yeah, it really does. And it's been a headline grabber in Asia as well. China, you know, has enacted their AI regulations, And Singapore launched their second version of its AI national strategy last year. More recently, for example, the ASEAN member states published AI guidelines. And looking ahead, we expect new legislation coming from India by the middle of this year, potentially Japan before the end of the year. And Hong Kong has also indicated that it might fear AI rules and guidelines as well. So we'll continue monitoring, but clearly a lot going on.
Definitely a lot of moving pieces in the region. I think it'll be fascinating to see how these dynamics fall into place. Well, thanks for your time today, Meredy.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And to our listeners, stay tuned for more FICC market structure content on this channel. For more information on these topics, please reach out to your JP Morgan sales representative. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Market Matters. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily reflect the views of JP Morgan Chase & Co. and its affiliates, Together JP Morgan, and do not constitute research or recommendation advice or an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any security or financial instrument. They are not issued by JP Morgan's research department, but are a solicitation under CFTC Rule 1.71. Reference products and services in this podcast may not be suitable for you and may not be available in all jurisdictions. JP Morgan may make markets and trade as principal in securities and other asset classes and financial products that may have been discussed. The FICC market structure publications, or to one, newsletters, mentioned in this podcast are available for JP Morgan clients. Please contact your JP Morgan sales representative should you wish to receive these. For additional disclaimers and regulatory disclosures, please visit www.jpmorgan.com/disclosures. Copyright 2023 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved.